Morning. It's good to see you here this morning. I do want to also reiterate what Brother Laddie mentioned as far as our Carolina student lectures that are coming next week, and would hope and pray that each and every one of you will take time to come and encourage these men as they begin a life of preaching the gospel. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing to have people tell you, good job. Be praying for you, want you to do great. It means a lot because it's not always easy for these young guys as they go out and begin to preach and they need all the encouragement that they can get. So if you've got about 3.5 hours on Saturday morning and it'll be over before the ball games, come out and do something good next Saturday morning, something that really means something and will have a great effect, I believe, on the kingdom for many years to come. I think for the effort given, you're going to get so much more out of it than even the small amount of effort that it'll take to come and encourage these guys. It will make a big difference in their lives and in the church. So please do that. Those that have signed up to house the men, thank you very much. We do have enough and appreciate you signing up. I will get in contact with you tomorrow through email and kind of let you know who they are, when you need to be here to get them, and the other details regarding housing the men. I understand that we had cheaters. You know, it's one thing to have a church activity and to honestly compete, but it's another thing when you have cheaters. Now, I wasn't there, but I do understand that people entered Wendy's chili into the chili cook-off. I'm not going to mention any names, Robert. But, oh, there's three of them. Okay. I'm sorry. Oh, you came in third, too. So you even took a prize from someone else. So we'll be having that lesson on honesty in a few weeks. You know, there are truths that I know, and there are truths that I accept intellectually. But even with unquestioning and acceptance, the truths, many truths, stagger my imagination. One such is fingerprints. All of us know about our fingerprints, and we all know that we have unique fingerprints and that there is no one else in the world that has your fingerprint. No two fingerprints are the same. They are very distinctive. So much so that anywhere in the world you can be identified by your fingerprint. That staggers my imagination, how much variation you can get on the tips of your fingers. You know, if our fingerprints are on something, though, it indicates that whatever our fingerprints is on, that is our work. My work has my fingerprints on it. Your work has your fingerprints on it. God has fingerprints as well. And His fingerprints are also distinctive. And anyone can learn to recognize God's fingerprints on His work. The certain way to learn to recognize God's fingerprints is to learn to correctly identify God's work in the world and to identify God's work in your life. Commonly, we learn to identify God's fingerprints by looking at past experiences, things that have happened in our past, in our lives, and we look back and we say, God was at work there. I can see it now. God's fingerprints in His past work in our lives should give us courage and confidence as we move forward as His children, doing His work and accomplishing His purposes in our lives. You know, one night, God directed a man named Abraham to take Isaac, the son God promised Abraham, and to kill him, to sacrifice him on an altar in Genesis chapter 22. Now Abraham got up early the next morning and he chopped wood. He prepared for the sacrifice quickly. He split the wood so he could quickly put it up on the altar. He took the fire with him so that he could make the sacrifice and set it ablaze quickly. He took two young servants with him to assist him in making the journey as fast as possible. Abraham at this time was an old man. And so he took a donkey for himself to ride so that he could assure that he could make the journey that God had called on him to make. As he neared the site of the sacrifice, he told the young servants to stay behind so that they would not interfere with the sacrifice. Because, you know, if you were with some with an older man with his young son, probably in his teens or upper teens, you know, and you're seeing him try to kill his son, you're probably going to try to intervene, right? So you guys stay back. I don't want any interference in my doing what God has commanded me to do. As he neared, it took 3 days to get to the place that God had specified. That is a long time. Moms and dads, think about that for a moment. Think about having 3 days to think about killing your child. Think about the difficulty. Think of the things that went through his mind constantly. Was he able to sleep at night thinking about God telling him, I want you to kill your son, the son that I promised you for so many years? He had 3 days to think about it. And at the place that God designated, Abraham built an altar, placed Isaac on it, and would have killed him had an angel not stopped his hand from plunging that knife into his precious son. The angel said, I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Why was Abraham ready and willing to quickly sacrifice a son that he waited 25 years to receive from God? He could look back from the time that he was 75 years old and see God's fingerprints on his life. That was why. Abraham could look back over those years of his life and see God at work. When he thought it was impossible to have a son, he had a son. Sarah's too old. He's too old. They had a son. They laughed at the promise of God. They had a son. He could see the fingerprints of God in those promises. He could see the fingerprints of God in that son all over his life. He could see the fingerprints of God during the 25 years that he waited for God to give him Isaac. He looked back and saw how God repeatedly did the impossible throughout his life. And because he saw God's fingerprints on his past, he did not hesitate for one moment to place his present in the hands of God. Because he'd already seen what God could do. If ever a teenager experienced the best and the worst of life, it was Jacob. I'm sorry, Joseph, his son. It was Joseph in Genesis chapter 37. Of Jacob's 12 sons, Joseph was the favorite. Now, we're not going to talk about the problem with favorites and parental favorites. But the fact was, he was his favorite. His rich father gave Joseph the best that this world had to offer. But because Joseph was an arrogant brat, and there's just no other way to put it, folks, than that, his 11 brothers hated him, or his 10 brothers hated him. And they hated him so much that they captured him in the wilderness and they sold him as a slave to the Midianites. After he grew up fast and became honorable and trustworthy and a diligent laborer in Genesis chapter 37 and verses 39 through 41, he refused the sexual advances of his owner's wife. And she was angered at his refusal and accused him falsely of trying to rape her. His master, upon hearing that, became angry and had him imprisoned in the royal prison. Yet in prison, Joseph was a model prisoner and became the appointed trustee. He was so responsible and trusted that he was placed in charge of all the prisoners, and the warden did not even check on the things that Joseph did, because he knew Joseph did right. He helped the king's cupbearer, whom the king put in prison. And all that he asked of this man, of this cupbearer, this servant of Pharaoh, is that when you return to the king, when you return to the king's side, please remember me. Tell him about me. And the cupbearer returned to Pharaoh and immediately forgot about the one who had interpreted his dream in the prison. 2 years passed before Joseph was brought before the king. An opportunity came for Joseph to interpret the king's dreams. And as a result of his interpretation of those dreams, the dream of the seven fat cows and seven skinny cows, we know the dreams. He became the second most powerful man in the kingdom, second only to Pharaoh himself. And in that position as a powerful ruler, he saved his father, he saved his brothers and their families from starvation. And his father died, and the brothers were terrified that Joseph would take their vengeance, his vengeance on them for selling them into slavery. They said the only reason he has not done this to us yet is because he knew that father would not like it. And so he's just been waiting for the day that their father died to take his vengeance on us for what we did to him so many years ago in selling him into slavery. Joseph assured them that he would never take vengeance. And listen to what he said in Genesis chapter 50 and verse 20. He says, "You meant evil against me." Yes, that's a fact. We can see that clearly in the text, right? "You meant evil against me. But God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to bring about where we are right now, to preserve many people alive." Y'all hear what he's saying in that verse? Joseph is looking back on his life and he is seeing the fingerprints of God, is he not? "You meant it for evil, but just look back and see all that has been done beginning at the event of what you did to me. Even though it was evil and even though I didn't like it at the time, look at what God has brought out from it to preserve many alive, to make a difference." He saw God's fingerprints on his life and all that he had brought him to this point in life. You know, it is relatively easy for Christians to look into the distant past and to see the fingerprints of God. I hope that you can see them in your life. For example, you and I can look back at Jesus' betrayals, his trial, his execution on the cross, and clearly see God's fingerprints. God's fingerprints at the crucifixion are so obvious to each and every one of us as children of God. God was not only at work on that day, God was on His greatest work on that day. We look at the cross and see God's fingerprints in forgiveness, in redemption, in justification, atonement, and propitiation. You and I owe every spiritual blessing we have to God's work on the cross of Jesus Christ. Every Sunday we declare our faith in God's work through the cross by taking the Lord's Supper. We consciously reflect on what Jesus did for us in dying upon that cross. We remind ourselves of what God did for us by letting Him die. And we have to remember that. We often think about the aspect of Jesus' willingness, "Not thy will, but my will," or "Not my will, but thy will be done," when He prayed there in the Garden of Gethsemane. We always think about that. But remember the other end of that prayer too, the one that's listening, who loved His Son, who was one with Jesus Christ, had a relationship that is hard for us to fathom. As we look at John chapter 1 and verse 1, "In the beginning was God, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God." With God, this closeness that they had. What if your child asked you, "Mom or Dad, please don't let them kill me," and you had the power to stop it, and you didn't? Jesus is begging His Father in the garden, "Please don't let them kill me." So may we never forget as we partake of the Lord's Supper that God let Him die too for us. His love for us overrode His desire to preserve Jesus Christ alive. That's powerful, folks. Those are very clear and evident fingerprints of God in our world. You know, the believers that day, though, who watched him die could not see the fingerprints that you and I can see today. All they saw was the victory of evil. All they saw was that evil won, that God's Son had been killed. I imagine it was a fairly dark Friday night for the apostles and for the followers, for Mary. Dark Saturday as well. It wasn't until Sunday that the fingerprints were able to be seen just a little bit. You know, they saw no divine plan. They saw no divine purpose. They saw no divine accomplishment. It is all too common to be unaware that God is at work when He's working. It's hard to see sometimes the providence of God. And isn't that the way it always works? We look back at the arrogant and self-confident take control Peter, and we see how God remolded his heart and his attitude. But Peter didn't see that while it was happening, did he? We look back at the murdering, blaspheming Paul who hurt and destroyed men and women for their faith in Jesus Christ and see how God remolded his heart and attitude, but Paul couldn't see that while it was happening. When I look back through my life, I see God's fingerprints on my life so clearly and in so many situations where He has blessed me. Times when I thought things I did not want to go through at the moment that I was going through them, yet I look back and I'm thankful to God now that I endured those things for what He blessed me with as a result of those things. I see His fingerprints in bringing me here to you. I see His fingerprints throughout my life. And because I've seen what He can do with my past, I completely and totally trust Him with my future. Can the people closest to you, though, see God's fingerprints in your life? Can they see God's fingerprints on your heart? Can they see God's fingerprints on your attitudes and your emotions? Husband, can your wife, can your children see God's fingerprints on your life? Wife, can your husband, can your children see God's fingerprints on your life? Children, can your parents see God's fingerprints on you? Christians, can your friends, can your co-workers, can your boss, can your fellow students, can your neighbors see God's fingerprints in your life as they observe it on a daily basis? There are places that we despise seeing fingerprints, right? No one who wears glasses likes to see fingerprints on his or her glasses. Now, I've rented movies, DVD movies, and you put it in and it won't work, and you turn it over and there's a big old fat, greasy thumbprint right in the middle of it. You're like, my goodness, was this the person eating French fries when they put it in their DVD player? We don't like to see fingerprints there. We don't like fingerprints of any kind on a window or a mirror, round light switches, on shiny counters or glass tops. And Julie does not like fingerprints on her windows. And I want to tell you something. Oh, and not only fingerprints, but mouth prints too, right, Julie? And I want to tell you something. We've measured, and those mouth prints and fingerprints are at adult level. Not child. There are many places that we never want to see fingerprints. But there is one place I want to see fingerprints, and I want to see them clearly. The fingerprints I want to see are fingerprints on my heart. And I want them to be God's fingerprints. I never want God to stop molding. I never want God to stop shaping my heart into His heart, making it what He wants it to be. When I let God mold my heart, I guarantee you the rest of my life will follow. I want my heart to be like Play-Doh. I like Play-Doh. I love to just sit around and squish it. But I want my heart to be like Play-Doh, so pliable and soft in God's hands. I want God to constantly shape my thoughts and shape my feelings and my emotions and my attitudes and my motives and my outlooks, so that they will be motives and emotions and outlooks that are godly, that are what He wants to see in me. I want God to constantly touch my heart, and each time He touches my heart, I want Him to leave His fingerprint that says, I'm His. I'm His work. Who's shaping your heart? Is it God? Or is it Satan? If it is hard and unfeeling, if it is cold and judgmental, if it's and stiff, Satan is shaping it, and His cruel fingerprints are all over it. If it is soft and yielding, if it is kind and compassionate, if it is repentant and gracious, then God is shaping it, and His fingerprints are on it. Who do you want to mold your heart? Whose fingerprints do you want to be on your life? Do we realize and do we understand what a mess we make of our lives when we try to mold ourselves? Jeremiah said, it's not within man to guide his own steps, and it's not within man to mold his life either. We need the great potter to take our lives and to mold them into what God would have, He would have them to be. Our invitation song this morning is, Have Thine Own Way, Lord. And that's what it's about. That's what the fingerprints are about on our lives from God, is that He's having His way. We're His work. He's molding us. In fact, the first verse says, You are the potter, I am the clay. Mold me and shape me after Thy will while I am... Yielded and still. Thank you. See, that's why I better not sing that song. You better lead it, Chris, here in just a minute. But I am the clay. I want Him to be the potter. I want Him to mold me. I want Him to have His way with me. Have Thine own way. This morning we want to assist you. If you do not have the fingerprints of God on your life, He is not molding your life. He's not shaping who you are to be. You're not His work. Then give your life to Him today. And let Him begin to mold you into the person you were put up on this to be. A child of God. If you need to become a child of God this morning, come by believing in Jesus Christ, repenting of your sins, confessing Jesus Christ as the Son of God, and being buried in baptism, rising from that watery grave of baptism, having your sins washed away there to walk a new life, a life that is covered in the fingerprints of God as He molds and He shapes you into the likeness of His dear Son, Jesus Christ. You walk a new life, a life with God. If you're a child of God, maybe you let your heart become hard and you tried to shape it yourself, or you stopped letting God turn you into what He wants you to be and you decided you knew better. Know that you do not today. God knows best. Once again, give Him your heart that He might shape it, that He might make it what it needs to be, that His fingerprints are on your life. If we can help you in any way this morning, won't you let us? As we stand and as we sing.
I am the clay. Mold me and make me after Thy will. While